some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Election Day, Tuesday, November 2nd, 2010, and our theme is New American Beer and Trends in American Beer. I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Dieter, and Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Want to learn about good beer? Check out GreatBrewers.com, and we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars, GoodBeerSeal.com. Well, this is a very special show tonight. Not only is it the election and Halloween's over, we've got Jen Schwartzman and Dave Broderick on the show tonight. You guys go way back. Tell us a little bit about your relationships. You guys have been working in one of the most famous beer bars in America, the Blind Tiger.
Jen, why don't you start?
Let's see. Dave and I have known each other for quite a while now through this whole craft beer world. And I look to him as sort of a mentor because I've always had a lot of respect for what he created when he created the bar, the Blind Tiger. It's one of my favorites. Although I also highly appreciate, I am happy to be a regular patron at Jimmy's 43 and DBA too.
Didn't you work? Didn't you work at DBA Brooklyn?
I did.
Tell us some stories about Ray.
Oh no! It all started on a beer bus in Philadelphia.
Yes, it did.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. So I've been a bartender for 16 plus years now, and my career in the bar industry was also the beginning of my passion in the beer world. Because I worked at a place called the Wincoop Brewing Company in Denver, Colorado for a long time.
And John Hinkeloper is now running for governor.
And he's going to win.
And he was mayor.
He was mayor.
Incredible mayor. And the only problem with him running for governor is that Denver is going to miss him as the mayor.
Right.
Yeah, he's been
great. He looks so different now. I was watching a debate on TV with him. He looks like a grown-up. I mean, last time I met him was like out at Denver ABF, and he was like this kind of crazy mad scientist brewer guy.
And yeah, well, no, he never was a brewer. He was a geologist. And he
mad scientist one way or the other.
Yeah, and he knew what he was doing back then and did a great thing for the beer world and for lower downtown Denver. So Denver is one of my homes. And
so you worked at the place at the Wincoop brew pub with the pool tables with the L shape?
Yeah, we had some funky pool tables. I was one of the six opening cocktail waitresses when they opened that second floor of that pool hall.
Wow.
So that was... Yep.
They basically helped gentrify that whole area. Right, that was pretty much a derelict spot, and they kind of changed the whole...
Absolutely, and John was a big part of that. And so his influence in the Chamber of Commerce changed things back then, and now he's been a great mayor. So he's a fun guy to know.
It's amazing that a bar owner can become governor of Colorado.
Giving you some ideas?
Well, I will say, you know, traditionally, you know,
Vermont, maybe you got a chance there.
And, you know, brewers and pub house owners were community leaders.
That's true.
Public house.
But also brewers were definitely community leaders. They were, you know, and going back to the old days, whatever, Sumerians and all the stuff, they were charged with whatever, preserving their grain. You know, they had official functions.
I think we were even more important back then.
Yeah.
Sumerian times.
I think we're more important now.
I think that we should change the show to the League of Sumerians.
I like it.
Sumerian.
But, you know, having started in Denver, you know, there are some really great breweries out there in Colorado.
Oh, amazing breweries. And such a great community around craft beer out there. So I really fell in love with the community around the beer. And I was even more passionate about the people involved in it than the beer itself. And everyone knows I love the beer, too. So, but, yeah, I've been watching the industry, you know, from Northern California, where I'm from, to Denver, and now to New York. And it's so exciting to see what's been going on in the East Coast these last several years.
We've been trying to get Jen to do a blog for for a long time.
I'm working on
just,
it. And,
but we, when we talked about it, it wouldn't just be about, you know, reviews of beers or anything like that. It's going to be about the people in the beer industry, because she probably knows more. Yeah, exactly. She knows more people and more dirt than people just tell her stuff, you know, that they shouldn't say.
No, it's going to be far from a gossip column when I do it. But I'd rather use these amazing stories of all these really passionate people who are, you know, have done such incredible things in this beer world, and use them as hopefully, you know, an example of what to do, maybe what not to do in some situations, and hopefully to benefit the entire industry. That's my hope.
Speaking about Denver, how's Chris Black doing over at Fallen Rock?
That place is incredible. He's always got an incredible selection, right. And he seemed to be doing well, although he's running around, because when I see him, I'm out there for the Great American Beer Festival.
Sure.
And so
I've heard
he's a busy, busy guy, mm-hmm. and at the end of it, he probably collapses in a heap. But yeah, it was, you know, fun times in Denver this year.
Every fall, Jen does a huge trip. It's what, like 3 to 4 weeks?
Well, not every year, but this year got a little crazy.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you tell them where you went?
Okay,
because we're all jealous.
Yeah, I started out, I flew to Portland, Oregon, and I drove up to Yakima, Washington to attend hop school at Hop Union.
Cool.
So I sat around with a bunch of, you know, up-and-coming new brewers, talented people, learning a lot about hops and touring hop fields, and just, you know, lots of education for education's
sake.
Then
she came to my farm and made fun of my hops.
But
I just want to say something.
Oh, they're so cute.
Dave, Jimmy, you know, don't you wish you worked for yourself?
Like, Ray?
I wish I worked for me so I get a chance to do these things. I work every day.
You know, yeah. I work hard when I'm here. I know I work a lot, and I decided to reward myself. So then I went, drove back down, and saw Portland, Oregon in action, and that town is amazing. And I had really great friends there who took it upon themselves to show me as much as they could in 4 days, and I felt like I had just scratched the surface. So that one was fun. And then I did come home for 6 days, but then I flew to San Francisco and saw friends and family, and went on the Lagunitas Skunk Train adventure through the Redwoods. That was, yeah, a nice little respite. And then went from there, flew to Denver, did the GABF, and then hung out for another 5 days with friends. And there's some other really interesting stuff going on in Denver, though. There are a few new beer bars, and I've been talking about that, you know, for a while, that it needs to happen, because Chris is doing a great job, but there's room for more than one. And there's some really fun ones. Let's see, one's called the Euclid Inn, and then one is called Fresh Craft, and they're both doing great food, kind of like your model, Jimmy. Really, really nice food, and then a great beer selection, and kind of revitalizing that market, you know, and getting more people excited and thinking about it again. So it's really fun. So, yeah, so that was my trip.
That's
was about
awesome.
3.5 weeks of lots of beer, lots of friends and food and great, you know, West Coast cities. So it's fun.
Jen, what do you think are some of the new trends in American craft beer?
Well, I brought one.
What are we drinking right now?
We are drinking the Caldera IPA from Ashland, Oregon, and they can it. And so what I noticed,
what did you say? They do what to it?
They can it.
C-A-N, can?
Canning.
So are we drinking?
It's hot right now.
Are we drinking canned beer right now?
We are. And it's,
wow.
I know, and you would never know.
And it's got a green pop top. That's really psychedelic.
It's cool.
This is beer in a can.
This is beer in a can, just like that old...
Kind of a psychedelic looking...
mass marketed stuff.
Absolutely.
But so much better. And there are lots of breweries who are taking this on. And there's a huge... advantages to it. The beer is really well protected in there, no light, you know, so oxygen isn't taking over like it can even in a brown bottle. It was a really fun little thing they did at hop school where they handed us each a cup or two cups. One said A and one said one, and they just kind of wanted to know what we thought. And as people were trying, everyone's like, A, hands down A, brighter, like prettier bouquet. It just had all that like crispness and all the layers. And the other beer was great, but compared to the first one, not the same. Well, it was the same beer. It was the New Belgium Ranger IPA. And they happen to be one of the breweries who's making the same beer and both canning it and bottling it. So we were, the one that we loved was the canned version as opposed to the bottle. And it was it was the same age, you know, that the beer was like pretty much same batch or same age. And it was dramatically different. So it was a fun little
They say comparison. Sun can destroy a beer in about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's all it takes.
Yep, skunkiness.
To change it.
Well, yeah. I want to bring up another part of preserving beer. We want to talk more about the canned beers that you brought, because you brought quite a few, and they're really good. It's also about storage of beer for kegs. I know that not every bar keeps their kegs refrigerated. You know, and
it's hard. You
Sam Merritt, who's off and on from Civilization of Beer, is more of a technician. But I mean, how long can you leave a keg outside your bar before it goes bad?
It depends on how strong it is.
A stronger beer can last longer. Because I mean, I've let some strong beers age in my cellar outside of the cooler for quite a while, and then pop them open even a year down the road, and they've been incredibly good, really interesting, and evolved.
So you're saying the issue with cans versus it's the light issue?
Light.
Yeah. Exactly. It's and it, you know, there are advantages too. You could take it to the beach. You could, I mean, there are reasons why you know, cans are popular in certain situations. They're a lot easier to pack when you're hauling beer across the country, which I do often. And yeah, you don't have to worry about the breakage, about the suitcase coming down in a gray tub with beer and glass.
Sounds like that might have happened to you once or twice, Jen.
You know what? Knock on wood right here. It hasn't, but I'm ready. It's going to happen, you know, and it's not going to be pretty. I always heave a huge sigh of relief when all is well and the beer's intact.
Jen, what is the first beer that you brought us? The one we're drinking?
The one we're drinking?
The psychedelic yellow.
Oh, yeah. It's Caldera, and it's Ashland, Oregon. It's a really nice, like, you know, crisp, really pretty hoppy IPA. I brought two different ones. The other one that we'll get to here is a Modus Operandi from Ska Brewing out of Durango. They've been around for a long time. And
where's Durango?
Durango's in southern Colorado.
Oh, Colorado.
And I'm sorry. Yeah, Colorado. And this, I threw this side by side taste test to a bunch of my regulars at the Tiger for fun. And people were split about 50-50 in which one they preferred. There's something in Colorado IPAs, they're often very fruity and floral. There's that
malty
and have a malt balance that I really do like. So I tend to lean toward that one, but that's just my personal preference. And it's lots fun when notes. Everybody has their own, you know.
Caldera is more West Coasty.
Exactly.
This is awesome. I'm going to break this up for a minute. We're going to take a little break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're here tonight with Ray Dieter from DBA and Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger and a farm up in Vermont called Somewhere in Time. Dave, do you have a name for the farm that you own now?
Yes, actually, I didn't name it. It's been a farm since 1784, and the original owners were the Aiken clan, and they call it the Aiken Stand. It actually was built as a tavern, a stagecoach stop, and it's always been known as the Aiken Stand. We have the original sign that they hung out front, which is in our dining room now, and we're going to try to get a reproduction made of it. But yeah, the Aiken Stand.
Well, Dave, you're living the life. I mean, many days people come up to myself, and I'm sure they come up to you, Ray, and they say, oh, you're living the life, you're a bar owner. But I have a feeling that the real life is the bar owner who was able to move up to Vermont and buy a farm.
I don't know, Jen, what do you think about that? You saw me this weekend.
That
digging.
Yeah, the farm is beautiful. But yeah, the work is hard up there. Everybody works really hard and in a different way from the work we do. This hard beer drinking work.
I had some of my guests helping me with my hops this weekend digging, and after about a half hour, like, okay, that's enough. Thanks very much.
The novelty wore off. Yeah, the fresh pretty
air,
quickly.
The fresh air kids from New York were like, done.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the more you hang out in bars, probably the less you can work on a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly
you
right.
You lose your stamina.
Yeah.
I do say that there are a number of people who are all like waiting for Dave to write the book on how to live the life of Broderick, because I know that Dave worked hard.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
I guess I'll get on that.
You know, the last time I looked on Facebook, Dave Broderick's Facebook photo was of him in bed with a magnum of beer. What was it?
It was a 3-liter bottle of Allagash Triple that Rob gave me. And so my wife took that picture. I thought I was waking up next to her, but it was the bottle. And
when that happens.
But I do have one quick farming story. I actually went to my first farming workshop down in Virginia, just south of Joel Salatin, who's in Omnivore's Dilemma. And this wasn't Joel Salatin's farm, which I clearly learned. Right after breakfast, we went out to the barn, and one of the guys that ran the farm all of a sudden pulled out a .22 caliber rifle and shot the cow in front of us in the head, and then slit its throat, and we bled it into a bowl, and then they handed us knives and said, now you skin it. And I was like, what? And so we skinned the whole thing, and I didn't eat as much for lunch as I did for breakfast. And so that was my first farming workshop. But then we actually went into town, Floyd, population 422, and they actually had a bar called Dogtown where they had Aventinas, North Coast, Scrimshaw, Pilsner, and about 8 other great beers, Terrapin, all this stuff. And it turns out the town has one brewery, Shooting Creek, 3 vineyards, and a cidery and a meadery, all with a population of 422 in the middle of nowhere. So there's hope.
Wow.
That sounds like...
I was shocked. I mean, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
That sounds like Germany. That when I was in Germany years ago, little town of Bruckberg that had 2 brew pubs and 1 insane asylum. And, you know, and it was tiny. There was just a long highway going off to the horizon in both directions. And I thought, wow. And they had 2 brew pubs they were supporting. So it definitely can be done on a small scale.
Do you think that all these great, you know, craft breweries around the country and other countries, do you think that they really depend on the American market, in particular, like the urban American market?
I think, you know, that's what they're... I know the guys up in Vermont definitely do. I mean, particularly in the winter, because nobody's going to come up and visit them when it's cold. So that's when they tend to ship more stuff, especially if they're small, they'll ship it to maybe the cities. Philadelphia, New York, Boston, for them. And I'm sure that's true in most of these rural breweries, the farmstead breweries that are starting to pop up. And I do think that's a new huge trend, and it's going to be a big one. Are these small 7-barrel, 10-barrel at the most, some smaller 1-barrel, some of who we've had on the show.
Right, right. I'm excited about that whole thing.
Yeah, these guys, I mean, they're just, because they can just do so many things. They never make the same thing twice. Or if they do, it's, you know, one beer they'll make, you know, they'll be their flagship, and the rest is just their artists, whatever they want to do, you know. And there's just a lot of cool stuff coming out of there. One of which we're actually having right this second from... Sean Hill. This is the only thing that he's ever bottled. Actually, he bottled 4 of his barrel-aged beers. It's a Baltic Porter, slightly smoked, with the guy that he used to work with in Denmark. He aged this particular one in French oak.
Wow.
It's delicious.
And, it's just an incredible beer.
A lot of
smoke. The balance of the smoke with the oak.
I mean, is it worth saying the reading the label?
Yeah.
Why don't you read the label to us, Dave?
I'm blind. I can't read anymore.
It's Dave's. It's Fear and Trembling, Frykt Oak Bøyven, the smoked Baltic Porter, Asian oak barrels, French oak Cabernet. But you've really been lucky to latch on to guys like Sean Hill and Sean Lawson.
Sean Lawson, another one.
Vermont. Amazing brewer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people saying now that the two Seans, Sean Lawson, Sean Hill, and John Kimmick, who's at The Alchemist, three of the best brewers on the East Coast. And, you know, they all happen to be
And there's Paul
close
Saylor,
to her,
too.
And Paul Saylor over in Burlington at American Flatbread. So we're very lucky. And now we've got new guys coming online, too. Alan Van Ande at Von Trapp. And Vermont is like all of a sudden, you know, after sort of going along pretty well, is really all of a sudden taken off for small brewers.
So what powers this? I mean, the idea is what? You want to go somewhere what? There's cheap rent or cheap land, maybe some cheap access to water, things you need for
high quality of life.
Quality of life.
I mean, it's more
they
of that.
Work hard, but it's a beautiful lifestyle up there too. So when the hubbub of the city gets
and people in Vermont really appreciate good beer. I mean, I think there's only 600,000 people, but per capita they drink. I think they're 10%. Craft beer is like 10% of the market, which is huge. But they really support their own. I mean, if you make beer in Vermont, people are going to drink. I mean, if it's good. People are going to drink it. And so I think that's another reason. There's a lot of support, you know, amongst the population.
Well, it sounds like some of the states, like you're talking about Oregon, Colorado, Vermont. Are there is state by state, do the laws favor the small producers of beer, like a nano brewer, micro brewer?
Well, whether the law does or not, the economics don't. But things have changed a bit. You know, a lot of these guys, especially the Vermont guys, all talk about guys like Tom Baker who, you know, made great beer but couldn't charge what he needed to charge to make money
at
the
size.
That's
Tom Baker from Heavyweight.
Right. Well, I'm actually going to go down and see on Thursday and at his new brew pub, Earth Bread, where he's doing very well in
Philadelphia, right?
Mount Airy, yep. A lot of them talk about how he sort of set the stage and then they came along and they were able to up the prices and charge what they needed to charge to actually make money. So, yeah, the economics of it is really tough for the small brewer unless you're really good and you can really charge that high price point and get it. You know, that's what they've had to do, and that's what they are doing. So it's working.
Well, Jen, for you, going out west, are there any other breweries you want to give a shout-out to?
Oh, man. You know, that's difficult because there are a lot of them, and I'm a fan of a lot of breweries out there.
How about Dave Keen at Toronado? Even though
oh yeah, and
Dave
you know,
is brewing?
Oh,
beer bars.
Oh, and you know what? And Dave and Jen
Big
finally
Daddy.
Got married.
Really?
So I attended their wedding reception of sorts at Falling Rock Tap House. That was just another serendipitous occurrence in my travels. But yeah, the Toronado was fantastic as always, full of character.
And where's Falling Rock Tap House? Where's that?
Falling Rock is the one we were talking about in Denver.
That's in Denver.
That's the
friends?
Big established. Okay. They have about 70 tap lines there. It's one of these walls of beer.
It's been there about 12 years, I guess.
Yeah, it's been there for a good long time, and it's done really well. And Chris Black has done a great job with that. And then Toronado is another one of my favorite beer bars of all time, and that's in the Lower Haight in San Francisco. And
that's about 20 years.
Yeah,
he's been there a long time.
He's been there a long time, PDA. And the place is full of character, but also great beer and great sausages at Rosamond next door. And so you grab, or actually you order, and they ask you for here, to go, or next door, and you say next door. And they have banged on the wall of the bar, the mutual wall, and you kind of look at your watch and go, oh, that's probably my sausage, and you go and grab it, and they shuttle the little baskets back. It's a great system. It's a symbiotic relationship, and so another great beer bar. But Lagunitas, we were talking about them a little bit, and man, we also I got to hang out with those great guys, Ron Lyndon Bush, who I know has been on the show.
We love Ron. Yep.
Trevor Jankowski, and all those guys are great, and they know how to throw a party. But then I came back and there was a Lagunitas event at the Blind Tiger, and I had some beer that I had never had before from them, and it's fun when a brewery like that, just when you think you know what they do, then they do other things really well. And they did there was a sour, It was Ron was calling it a goose. I think it was a sour saison. You don't think of them as doing sours. They do it well. And then I had the best chili beer of my life. They're a habanero IPA. And it just had the most beautiful slow burn in the just in the back. Well, actually, the nose was a magic trick because it was all floral and fruity. You had no clue what was coming. And then you take a sip, and it didn't interfere with your tongue and your palate. So it just like kind of had this nice, pleasant burn that lingered. And we have a new brunch going on Sundays at the Tiger now, and there's huevos rancheros, and it was a match made in heaven. So
Blind Tiger, and Jen hates gimmick beers, so for her to say that,
no, really, I just am picky.
You're a purist.
I've got a question.
Kind of like Ray is a purist.
What's this skunk train that you were mentioning earlier?
The skunk train is a 130-year-old historic train that goes between Willits, California, which is inland, and Fort Bragg on the coast. And you can take partial trips and things. And I'm from Northern California. I'd never been on it. But they, what Lagunitas does every year, and they do it to like kind of reward their own people, and they're a lot of really hardworking distributors from all over the country, and then a lot of their fans in the region right around in Mendocino, I can't remember. Anyway.
Petaluma, California.
Petaluma, California is where they're located, and they've got lots of friends. So they invite everyone out, and they rent out the KOA campground at the base of the skunk train. And they rent out the train, and everyone camps between Friday and Sunday, and then but spends most of Saturday on this train. And they've got kegs in every car, and bands playing on the
and it's open.
Flat car.
It's open flat cars, right?
It's like there's a flat car, and then there's like all this seated area, and everyone drinks all the way up to this midpoint in North Spur, gets off, and then they have another band playing and a barbecue, and they feed us. They fed us the whole time, royally. And then they invite all their brewery friends. So, you know, Natalie and Vinny Salerzo from Russian River were there, and guys from Moonlight, another one of my favorites, absolutely. Brian Hunt is an amazing brewer. And then a bunch of others from the region who are friends. And so they just kind of have this great community, and everyone drinks, and they ride. Everyone drinks and rides back and
maybe
parties until the next day.
They just drink. It's like the skunk has nothing to do with anything else.
Yeah, where does skunk come from? What's that part?
It's Northern California. That's all I'm going to say.
It's because they're, gotcha. Are they drinking
and
out
it's,
of...
And it's Ron Lindenbush.
That's the real name, though. That's the, yeah.
Are they drinking
There's
out of
a reason.
Glass bottles, Jen?
What?
Are they drinking beer out of glass bottles?
More kegs, but this was volume. But yeah, in glass bottles. They are also, it's my understanding, they're going to do a skunk train equivalent on the East Coast.
Where?
What?
They
where,
found what? Some train.
When?
I don't know where, but it's up here somewhere. And they're going to do this sooner rather than later. So keep your ears open.
Can you book us a really ticket fun. Now, please?
I'll have to pull some strings and work our connections.
You guys are awesome. We have to take a short little break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. Sorry, guys. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have the best guest of all time, Jen Schwartzman, ultimate bartender from Blind Tiger and other places.
Yeah.
Since you're here, Jen, we have a special email question from a listener. And it could be addressed to you, but I think everyone on the panel gets to answer this one. And it's a good one. It's from Maureen Wilka, who lives on the Lower East Side in New York City. How does gluten-free beer taste? Is it even worth my time? And before you answer that, I will say that there are a lot of people that feel like they have some allergies to glutens. And I don't know if that's true or not. I feel like everyone's now trying to figure out if they have an allergy to this or that. You know, gluten means you're allergic to wheat or in some form. And there are some gluten-free beers. Let's expand the question. Is there really an allergy to gluten? And then is there a good gluten-free beer?
There definitely is a sensitivity to gluten. I know people who have had problems with that. I think it's a little trendy right now, but
some people are. I've seen people.
It's more like how does the allergy come out? Is it bloating? Is it
it's
hives?
It's swelling, hives.
Yeah,
I mean it's bad.
People are miserable.
I mean, people that have it, it's horrible. So it's horrible to watch.
It is a real
celiac
allergy,
I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, exactly. And no, it's real.
It's real. Although it's sort of like food allergies too, where there really is a difference between having a food sensitivity and having an allergy, which is usually in the realm of life-threatening, perhaps. But a lot of people have sensitivities to things that they should try to avoid, and gluten is an irritant for a lot of people. So there's validity, but we have noticed at the Tiger that the gluten-free beer sales have gone through the roof.
They have a TBA as well.
Have they?
Yes.
And we only carry one right now of the greens. But
the greens
I think
from the UK.
I think there are four that I've seen, four different ones.
There's
we have a Bards. Belgian triple. Okay.
That's a local one.
It's funny. The best one in the one that wins the gold every year, both World Cup
I know what you're going to say.
And GABF is from The Alchemist. And it's because his wife can't have gluten. And so he wanted to make a beer that she could actually drink, Jen. And so she has... People that don't even have a problem drink it. So you can make a good one.
From The Alchemist. Where is that? Waterbury?
But he doesn't bottle and he doesn't really keg. So you have to go there to drink it.
So the celiacs of Waterbury, Vermont, are luckier than most because they have an award-winning gluten-free beer.
But
it
shows that it can be done. So if people start taking it, brewers start taking it seriously.
Maybe they could have a celiacs fest.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's not the kind of thing you go looking for.
I don't want to go to that. Could you imagine what that would be like?
Oh, man. But it's not the kind of beer that you, I'm going to have a stout, I'm going to have a gluten-free beer, I'm going to have an IPA. It's something, it's
gonna
because
be pretty,
you can't have
it's
going to
be pretty
things.
Simple.
Yeah, it's going to be very simple.
Yep.
I've tried the things.
Yeah.
It's kind
You've
of,
tried all the
not
greens,
all of them.
Four of them?
I've tried the greens. Yeah, they're good. They're drinkable.
Yeah.
You know?
And if you really can't have all this beer that we're lucky enough to drink, then at least it's something. So,
well, if you have a gluten problem, could you drink wine? Yes. Mm. Can you drink
cider? Yes.
Yes,
you can have cider.
So there is actually a whole world out there. I myself would probably go because we all have sensitivities to different food products.
What are you sensitive to?
Well, maybe right now I'm not drinking dairy or eating sugar.
Wow.
For different reasons, that's guys. Bold. I can't talk about it on the air. But I'm trying to...
There was
a recent article in Ale Street News by Warren, the beer sensei. And it was kind of like he's getting older and he's like, if I want to keep up my beer consumption, what am I going to do? We have to improve the rest of his diet. And I have heard that said about, if you're sensitive to certain food issues, sometimes if you improve the rest of your diet, you can still go, indulge in what you really want to indulge in. So, I don't really eat sugar, and I don't drink milk, but I can drink as much wine and beer as I want.
How about raw milk? Have you tried that?
I'm actually a secret distributor of raw milk.
Ah,
we have a very Jimmy's
anymore.
Number 43.
But you don't drink it. You just
not
sell
a
it.
Secret now.
Well, it's actually, raw milk is actually the best butter, too. You can put your raw milk into a little Cuisinart, make your own butter. Yum. But let's segue not into that, guys. We know that, places like Jimmy's 43 and even Blind Tiger is doing farm-to-table events and all that. And
we've got a fun one coming up.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Dave, why don't you tell us about it? Because you know more.
Well, we've got the guys that run the CSA in our town of Barnard, Vermont. Population 700. They have a CSA of 65 people, and every Thursday night they have their pickup when you can go get your bag of veggies. And usually there's about 130 people. They turn it into a party. There's a band. They have a cob oven. They cook pizzas, flatbreads, they call them up there. And so anyway, every year they come down and do a party at the Tiger. They bring down all their produce. Our chef cooks up a big buffet, does a free buffet, and that'll be going off at 5 p.m.
This Sunday.
This Sunday. Yeah. And so it should be pretty
Marathon
good.
Marathon Sunday, right? But November 7th.
Exactly. Yeah. November 7th. And we're going to raid Jimmy's 43 on Saturday night. All these Vermonters are going to show up and give Jimmy a little bit of a hard time.
We like to hang out with farmers.
They're going to try to force raw milk down his throat.
Well, raw milk. But anyways, we're talking about gluten and all that stuff. But I would say, you know, if I had a problem with any one beverage, I would definitely overindulge in the other beverages. So if I couldn't drink beer, I would gladly go into wine or cider or something else. What about you, Ray? What, you know?
Well, I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking that now whiskey has, like, bourbons are wheated often, so that's off the list.
But it's distilled. I think that the gluten
is that changing?
Yeah, the gluten's gone. So you
cool.
can. So you got nothing to worry about.
You're fine.
That makes me
you
so happy.
You pretty much overindulge in everything anyway, so it's
that's not true at okay. all. I'm a very moderate guy.
Ray, you've been so quiet tonight.
No, I'm just listening to the fascinating
conversation. I know, we've got Jen and Dave. It's like the best show ever, you know?
It's fun to be here, finally. I've been meaning to drop by for a while.
Ray, how was the Liquids of Interest last night?
Last night was great. We had tequila. And when we have tequila, basically every week I ask the people what they want to have the following week, and every week they say we want to have tequila. So it's like I got to like kind of moderate that. I've got to like kind of manage how often we get to drink tequila at Liquids of Interest.
So they really are that you see that they're everyone is leaning toward tequila these days.
Tequila, yeah. Well,
see, they're right because that's my favorite.
Well, it's my favorite too. But it. I just, you know.
So last night we had tequila. We had five tequilas, and we had some great things last night. And next week,
what was your favorite one?
It was a new one I never had before, and it was called. Oh shit! What was it called? It was. You know what? I'll put it on the website. I can't remember right now.
Now you sound like Christine O'Donnell.
Well, I know, but it was the fifth one, Dave.
Okay.
It was the last
one. That's okay then.
Yeah. But
next week. Do you still have it when we go over there tonight?
Yes, we will. Okay. Absolutely. And you're going to love it.
Okay.
Next week, we're having apple spirits for the harvest time. So it's going to be Applejack. It's going to be cider. It's going to be all kinds of apple.
Calvados,
absolutely.
And so where do you get all that stuff? Like, where does that come from?
Distributors.
God love them.
Oh, tough life.
From legal sources.
So it's all legal. I get it.
All right. Well, let's have a couple more relevant questions before we close out. Jen.
Yes.
Being a very popular New York City bartender, which nights and where do you work?
Oh.
Number one question.
Yeah, no. Well, it's hard to keep track. So I have three bartending jobs. So I'm well diversified right now.
One of us goes out of business.
Exactly. Which is not going to happen. They're great places. The Blind Tiger those shifts are Saturday and Sunday days from opening when we open at 11:30 until 8 p.m. And it's great time to come in there because a lot of serious beer drinkers come in, even from outside the city. You know, couples who are like, my wife and I come into the city, you know, twice a year and we tour around. And then they often start at the Tiger and then we can send them to go visit all of you guys at all the other bars, too. It's fun. And then I work at Finelli's, which is the second oldest bar in the city on Prince and Mercer.
Awesome place.
Yep. Yeah. And that place, I'm there Friday days. So that's like 10 a.m. when we open until 6. And then, and we've, you know what? We're working on the beer list, too. It's like coming around.
Didn't you just get something to cut?
Well, we got a 60-minute IPA, so that helped that. And now we're working hard to get some 6 points in there, which it's about time. So that's good. And then I'm at Bar 82, which is East Village on 2nd Avenue between 8th and 9th. And I'm there Tuesday and Wednesday nights, late night, 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. So, and we've got some decent beer there, too. So I managed to... managed to provide my favorite beverage, but I also like my tequila. Trust me.
People actually come in and they want their gin time, so they come in and literally it's so funny. They'll just come in and they get a little upset if she doesn't give them enough time.
It's hard to spread
on other people.
I know,
so Jen, what is it that makes a good bartender? This is a whole nother. The next time we come back, we're going to go down that road.
I mean, it's gonna be the bartender show. There are just as many different kinds of bartenders as there are different kinds of bars out there. And I think that the goal for any bartender is to find, to not only know their own strengths and weaknesses, but also to find a bar, or in my case, three bars, where I would like to hang out on the patron side, because then being behind the bar is seamless. Because those are people who you would want to hang out with in a bar anyway. So if you like that environment, then, you know, that's magical. If you can, if you, and I'm now working, you know, Finelli's and Blind Tiger are two of my favorite bars in the city and have been for years, the old Tiger and now this new manifestation. And I just feel so lucky to be behind the bar of some of my favorite establishments.
I've been going to the Blind Tiger. I've been going there, obviously.
Oh, you've been going there secretly.
Yes. But do they have, are you the first female bartender there?
Oh, no.
I never saw
there,
girls.
No, there are other girls. No, people say that. I mean, it's
Alice will kill you for saying that.
Sorry, Alice.
Remember Alice?
Jeez, please.
No, I'm not the first, but yeah, there are a bunch of great old guys who've been going in there for 20, 30 years.
Right,
and
these old artists.
They
guys.
Get a little volatile after one too many glasses of cheap white wine, and, you know, they've known each other too long, but it's hilarious, so it's fun. So, yeah, come visit me.
All right.
Introduce yourselves.
Just give your little microphone over to our other guests. We have another guest who didn't get a chance
to come
on tonight.
I've been hogging the microphone.
Corey Bonfilio used to run the Whole Foods Bowery Beer Room, and he works at Jimmy's Number 43 and Rattle and Hum right now. How you doing, Corey?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
All right. We're just going to give you a shout-out. Thanks for coming on. We'll just rattle off some of the events at the Good Bristol Bars. We have tonight at Rattle and Hum, Bill Kovaleski and the Gang from Victory. Thursday this week, Shipyard Brewery from Portland, Maine will be at the Pony Bar. On November 15th, a very special event. I know Jen's going to be there. Schlenkerle from Bamberg, Germany, their chef Wolfgang, will be preparing a special beer dinner at Jimmy's Number 43. I'm really proud of that. And the only reason we got it is because some restaurant in Philly said no to it. So I feel lucky that fell on our lap. But here we are, New York City, Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. I'm Jimmy Carboni. My great co-host, Ray Dieter. Our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor. Engineer, Nat Wiener. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned.
Thanks for tuning in, guys, to Beer Sessions on Heritage Radio Network. That's it for today. Be sure to tune in live tomorrow for the thrilling conclusion of The Dark Prince, the radio drama by our very own Curtis B. Wayne. I'm burning down the house. That's at 7 p.m. See you guys tomorrow.